The gospel reading this morning is from Mark chapter 9, verses 30 through 37. In your pew Bible, that is page 45 in the New Testament. Mark chapter 9, verses 30 through 37. They went on from there and passed through Galilee. Jesus did not want anyone to know it, for he was teaching his disciples, saying to them, "The Son of Man is to be betrayed into the human hands, and they will kill him, and 3 days after being killed, he will rise again." But they did not understand what he was saying and were afraid to ask. Then they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "What were you arguing about on the way?" But they were silent, for on the way they had argued with one another, "Who was the greatest?" He sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." Then he took a little child and put it among them, and taking it in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, it's certainly one of the favorite verses of the church, right? "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." We like welcoming children, right? Don't we love kids? Don't we love it when Main Lim does the offering and he's holding his granddaughter in his arms, you know? We always get a bigger offering when he does that. It's a great thing. We love kids. And that's kind of one of the things that the church is supposed to be about, right? Welcoming children. Well, I've been thinking about this whole passage and going through it and going through the other passages for the lectionary reading for today. And it kind of kept coming back to me. When we were in the pastor's Bible study last spring, we got to a passage that really struck me. And it's about Elijah. Now, Elijah, we all know Elijah was one of the great prophets, and probably the best-known story about Elijah was the time that he went to Mount Carmel and had the big thing with the prophets of Baal, right? And he told the prophets of Baal, "Oh, build your altar and pray to your god Baal to send fire down, and if he does, then he is the true God of Israel, and I'll build my altar and I'll pray to the God of Israel, and if he rains fire down, then he is the true God of Israel." And we all know the story that the people of the prophets of Baal did everything they could to get the fire started and nothing happened. And Elijah did everything he could to keep the wood wet and all these things to make it harder for it to ignite. And God threw fire down and boom, it was this huge event. And Elijah won and he was the best prophet in Israel and he won the Super Bowl and everything, you know, it was it. And then after a 7-year drought, then it started to rain. And he ran off the mountain, ran down and ran into the wilderness. And typical of somebody that's just had a great event in his life, he went into the wilderness, sat under a tree and pouted. "I'm done. I've had enough." He literally prayed to God, "Take my life. I'm done." Ever felt like that after a big event and everything's gone great and you're just like, okay, that can't get better than that, God. Let's end on a high note. Take me home. And then, of course, we know the story that happens next. Great wind. God wasn't in the wind. Earthquake. God wasn't in the earthquake. And then a still small voice spoke to Elijah. It was a great moment in Scripture. And here's the thing. Last spring, I had never noticed this. Maybe it's because I'm getting older, and it struck me differently this time. What did God say to Elijah? God gave him a task. It wasn't to go conquer the prophets of Baal or rescue the people of Israel. God tells Elijah, "Go and anoint Hazael, king over Aram. Go and anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, king over Israel. Go and anoint Elisha, son of Shaphat, prophet in your place. And what struck me was that Elijah was done with tasks. Now he was about passing the baton, reaching out to the next generation, anointing them, preparing them, and empowering them. God assures Elijah he's not alone. I love this. Elijah feels so alone in all of this, and God says, no, 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 there's 7,000 other prophets still on my side. But this whole idea that God is basically saying to Elijah, you're not done until I say you're done. And you're not done. I haven't said so. You will be done when you have completely passed the baton to the next generation. So it gets me thinking. Of course, the older I get, the more I think about this stuff. How many of you have seen Amadeus, the movie? It's funny, I asked that of Xander, our youth director. He said, yeah, I didn't like it very much. I had to watch it for my film class. I'm like, it won an Academy Award. I think maybe a couple. He goes, yeah, I just didn't like it. Such a Xander. Of course, he likes Power Rangers, so that tells you something. But he's perfect for the youth, right? So one of the things about the movie Amadeus, and it's highly dramatized and highly fictional, we have to understand that, but this whole relationship between Salieri, Antonio Salieri, the wise instructional composer, and Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. And what you see throughout the movie, and we don't know a lot about that relationship in history. There were rumors after Mozart died that Salieri had poisoned him. That's about all. And so that was the premise of the whole movie. But I love the movie because it's kind of universal. You have this Salieri who's gone through all the schooling, been instructed, knows his stuff, is a pretty decent composer in his own right. And then along comes this snot-nosed, rude, undignified, uneducated kid who just spews out talent. And Salieri is disgusted by it, at least in the movie. I call it the Salieri effect. He had pure envy for this young man. Now, remember, I talked about this when we talked about the seven deadlies. Jealousy is the fear of losing something you have. Covetousness is desiring something that you don't have. And envy is hating somebody for having something that you don't have. Slight differences there. Of course, Salieri was affected by all three of those. He was jealous because he was afraid of losing his own sense of status. He was covetousness because he wanted what Mozart had. And mostly of all, he was envious because Mozart had this great gift. And he hated Mozart for that. He was a social buffoon, but he was so talented. How dare he? We've all probably experienced that to some extent, right? In your own life, maybe? You've had somebody that envied you for something that you had. It was the first time I think I recognized it in my own life. I was a lowly youth intern at First Presbyterian Church, Berkeley, and the youth director came up to me one Sunday after everything and said, Lance, I noticed that all the kids run up to you and want to talk to you after youth group. They used to do that to me, but now they're doing it to you. And I was kind of like, okay. I didn't really know how to respond to that, but it was a realization on his part, and partially because he was getting older and starting to become less relatable to them, and I was barely out of college and kind of a goofball, and I like movies like The Power Rangers and things like that. So a few years later, I had a conversation with a friend of mine who I will call Jeff, who worked for a composer, a kind of a well-known composer on Broadway, who I will not name. And I was having breakfast with Jeff one time, and he made the comment, "He is such a jerk to me." And Jeff was pretty talented in writing musicals for choirs and youth choirs and things like that, and that's why I got to know him, because he was writing stuff. And he just said, "Gosh, he just puts me down every second he can, and he doesn't like anything I do, and he finds mistakes left and right, and all these things. It drives me crazy." And I said, "Well, what are you going to do about it?" He goes, "I'm writing everything down, so when I get to his age, I don't do it to somebody else." And I thought, wow, that's really good. I've always remembered that. Don't be a Salieri. This can happen, maybe it's a teacher, maybe it's a parent. Parents can get envious of their own kids. Maybe it's a coach. It can be anybody. We're all in danger of it too. It's so funny. The reason I got talking to Xander, our youth director, about Amadeus was because I was kind of explaining what I was going to talk about in the sermon to him. And I said, you know, and it could quite easily happen to me with you, because people love you. You are super charismatic. You're super enthusiastic. You have way more energy than I do. It's very easy for me to sit there and go, "Oh, how dare he steal my light. Steal my..." So, and he started like saying, "Oh, don't worry, Lance, we need you." And I'm like, "Don't..." I'm not telling you for that reason. I'm just saying that we're all in danger of this. And it's something to be aware of, that we could start envying other people at a moment's notice. We can look at somebody who's very talented and go, "How dare they? Pastors are super exposed to this. They see another pastor that's super..." I just said super twice. That's really against my public speaking rules. But seeing another pastor who's very talented and just going, "Oh, how dare they?" I talked to a pastor recently who was starting a new church development in Hollywood, and she was saying all the pastors in her conference or whatever it is, she's in a different denomination, we're just like looking down their noses at her and picking things at her and everything. And I said, "Well, it's the Salieri effect. You've gone in, you've started this new church and it's growing, and you're starting to get actual people from the industry showing up, and they're all like, nah, who does she think she is? She hasn't done the work yet." We're all in danger of this. We all fall prey to envy. James warns us in this in his letter that Allison read earlier, that we're all subject to jealousy, selfish ambition, arrogance, lust, and envy. And those all lead to quarrels and divisions and conflict, and he even uses the word war in church. And it's all because of envy. And that's why Jesus rebukes his disciples. "What were y'all talking about on the road out there?" What were they talking about? Who was going to be greatest? "Oh, I'm going to be the top dog." "No, I'm going to be the top dog." And what did Jesus say? "Whoever is least among you will be the greatest. Whoever is the greatest among you will be the servant of all." Jesus was great about flipping things upside down, right? "Whoever welcomes..." And then he uses a child as an example. "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. Whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." Of course, Jesus dealt with the greatest envy in the history of humankind, right? The religious leaders of his day hated him. He was unschooled. He was uncultured. He came from Nazareth, an unclassy place, and he was way more talented than they were, way more gifted, way more profound. way more popular, way more everything, and they hated him for it. It was the Salieri effect all the way back then. So let me say, don't be a Salieri, be a swan. I was going to use their first names. Don't be an Antonio, be a Howard. It just doesn't sound as good. Howard Swan was a director that I worked with for years. I mentioned him a few weeks back in my different sermon. Many people called him the godfather or grandfather of choral music in the United States. He was phenomenal. As a young man, he was an incredibly talented tenor. And then he woke up one morning and his vocal cords were paralyzed. Couldn't talk at all. They shot some silicon directly into his vocal cords, and after that, he could only talk with a high-pitched, squeaky sound. He talked a little like this.
Choir, I want you to do this for me.
Now imagine being a phenomenal tenor and then having to speak like that. He could have very easily gone into the wilderness, sat under a tree, and pouted and said, I'm done. Take me home. In 1974, he said this in the LA Times. There's a bit of providence in this whole picture. If I had stayed in solo work, I wouldn't have amounted to very much. But I studied voice and consulted experts on how the voice worked. And when I began teaching voice, I could no longer illustrate with my own voice any longer. In other words, he couldn't sit there and go, we'll do it like this. Oh! Sorry, Bobby. He had to explain it with words. I had to find words to do it. I think this made my pupils a lot more independent. I didn't just sit in a corner and say, do it this way, and open up my mouth. I had to find other ways to teach. And so he became one of the greatest musical pedagogists in the field. Don't be a Salieri, be a swan, right? When you're a Salieri, you want to destroy others with envy. When you're a swan, you want to empower them with love. Don't be a Salieri, be a swan. So how can we pour into the next generation? You may feel like Elijah. Well, I've done it all here at the church. Some of us have been at this church for 112 years. We've done it all. We've served in every committee, served on session, served as deacons, served in the nursery, served in the children's education, done it all. We're tired. We just want to be done. But God's not done with you yet. You're still here. So maybe it's about passing the torch to the next generation. There's lots of opportunities. Of course, passing the baton to the next generation includes your own children, your own grandchildren, your own great-grandchildren. But in the church, it's the children of the church. We need volunteers in the nursery every month. Maybe once a month, being able to go in there so that to be sure that the parents who are with their kids all week long get an hour to sit in the presence of God. You may be able to help Pastor Peter. You may be able to help Xander in the youth department. You may even identify one kid in our youth group and say, I'm going to be your pseudo-grandparent, your church grandparent. And just love them and pray it for them. How can I pray for you this week? Just identify one kid. I've broken two of my rules today. Said use the word kid. One young person. Maybe even supporting the Hispanic ministry. Some of them have family that are far away. And to be able to have somebody that'll say, I'm going to be your grandparent and kind of church parent here in Santa Ana. In a moment, we're going to hear from Kamala. She's going to tell us about Lasamia. That's another way that you can jump in. Several people volunteer in our learning center here, and it's a great thing. After that moment for ministry, we're going to hear the song, The Prayer. which I don't like a lot of songs that come from animated movies, but that's one I do. And the prayer is actually written from the perspective of a mom singing to her daughter, right? Or do you even know? I would have to pull out my VHS to remember that. So, but again, this idea of encouraging the next generation. So I encourage you, my challenge to you, my invitation to discipleship to you, don't be a Solieri, be a Swan.